Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I'm your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode on May the 4th, 2015, in the evening. May the 4th be with you. No, but seriously, since we last recorded, there have been some major events in the world that we wanted to begin our podcast by addressing. So, Alex, how do you feel? Oh, I'm joined, by the way, by Alex Conway. And Alex, how do you feel about the birth of Princess Charlotte of Cambridge?
I feel more ambivalent about it than most things.
Yeah, the baby is named Charlotte Elizabeth Diana, and she is the princess, a princess, whatever. However they do that stuff in Britain now. But on a more serious note, as you're all well aware, there was some. I really don't even know how to describe it in Baltimore, and even the act of describing it is kind of brings some bias into play. But you all know what happened, and it had an impact on the Orioles, obviously. We had the game without fans on Wednesday, and of course the 2 days before that, the Orioles game was postponed as a result of, well... I mean, there was stuff on fire, and there had to be riot cops in the streets. So whatever you want to call that, that was all pretty crazy.
Unrest.
Yeah, unrest seems like soft pedaling when there was just, like, cars on fire in the street and whatever else was going on. And, you know, obviously everybody who lives in the city or even just in the area around the city has their own opinion about it. And especially by the end of the weekend with the continuing presence of the curfew... Like, I mean, you can look back in retrospect, and of course, one of the other weird things was the Orioles had to play a home series in the Trop.
Yes.
It was actually kind of unfortunate that they didn't get to have a walk-off while they were the home team in the Trop.
That would have been the best.
But as it turned out, they won 2 out of 3 games, so we can't really complain too much that we didn't get the dramatic...
But I would like to complain about the crab cakes that the Rays made for the Orioles press corps.
I don't know if our listeners saw that. So basically, the Rays public relations made a nice gesture, and they had on Friday, for Friday's game, they had a bunch of burgers cookies in the media dining room. Everybody likes burgers cookies. Maybe diabetics don't. I don't know. I don't know if they're gluten-free. Maybe that crowd doesn't like them also, but... most ordinary constituencies are going to like burgers, cookies. So those were very popular, and they were gone by like the second inning. And so on Saturday, they also tried to make them feel a little more at home, and they had some objects that they were calling Maryland style crab cakes, but they weren't crab cakes.
They looked like beige hockey pucks.
That's not a bad description. They look kind of like, to me, they look kind of like a Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich.
Yeah, that's fair. I was thinking like a fish filet sandwich at McDonald's.
Yeah, it was nice they tried, but leave the crab cakes to the professionals. I think maybe
yeah,
is the
nice
lesson there.
And, you know, I mean, from all accounts, it looks like the people down in Tampa did a good job of treating the Orioles well, and, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, they had the series where they had, like, there were no, you know, crowd noise prompts, and they had the Oriole bird down there for the weekend, and they did both the Orioles and Rays got walk-up music as to their usual pick, and, I mean, the Rays didn't have to do any of that stuff, and they did, so that was...
Yeah.
That was nice of them as an organization, although, of course, I'm curious whether behind how much disappointment there is behind the scenes over the particular arrangement that ended up happening, but, you know.
Yeah.
As far as the stuff on the field went, the Orioles won 2 out of 3 games, and in fact, they won, counting the Wednesday fanless game, they won 3 out of 4 of these weird circumstance games, so that was pretty good.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like we were talking a little bit before. It was under the circumstances the Orioles sort of had to do what they did. And if you're looking for, there's a lot of smart people out there that have written some stuff that you should go find. And even just in sort of the own little Orioles family, you know, you can go read and listen to the words that, you know, Adam Jones and Buck Showalter and John Angelo said about it all. And
I'm sure
you can
everybody
have
out
some.
there has seen Buck Showalter's comments that he was asked about after the game on Wednesday. And I mean, I don't think anybody has said it any better than him.
No.
So I really don't even want to try.
Exactly. I mean, if you want to know what I think, read those people and, you know, go read some smarter people than them and me, and you can go from there.
So that's Baltimore right now, and the curfew is all over, as of course everybody knows, and the Orioles are now going on their regularly scheduled New York road trip that will be the next six games.
Yeah.
And again, as Buck said, I don't want to say, well, I hope everything goes back to normal, because some things you don't want to be normal the way they were before, but hopefully we get a good situation that we settle into for all parts.
Normal enough at Camden Yards.
Yeah, that there can be baseball games at Camden Yards that are fans are in attendance and not being asked to stay in the stadium.
I was at that game. That was the David Lowe walk-off.
As fate would have it, that basically worked out, since the Orioles blew that game in the ninth inning after they had made the announcement to ask fans to stay in the stadium. And then by the time David Lowe walked it off, they were like, well, it's okay. You can go outside again.
Yeah.
So it was really just 20 or 25 minutes long enough to do that. So I don't know. I'm sure the Orioles were not intentionally trying to do a civic duty there, but it worked out that way.
True. I actually realized after that game, I've been to, I think, three walk-offs that involved David Lowe somehow, which is probably pretty rare.
I know he had one last year that I was at.
Yeah.
And
it was against Toronto.
I think that was even extra innings also.
Yeah, I think he hit it down the left field line, like a little opposite field single. And then there was the one, it was against the White Sox last year, where Nelson Cruz hit the grand slam to tie the game. I think in the 10th, David Lowe scored on a wild pitch. It was after he had collided. The only reason I remember all this is with a grand slam, which was obviously memorable, especially being there. And then Lowe had run into Bobby Dickerson, but they didn't. And you're supposed to be out when a base coach touches a base runner, but they didn't see it, and that play's not reviewable.
Now that you mention it, I remember that happening.
Yeah.
What a
game.
So
he was able to stay at third, and then like two pitches later, it was a wild pitch, and he scored the winning run.
Baseball. You never know when you're going to see something you've never seen before. Of course, we had that. Anybody who watched that game on Wednesday, you've never seen a game with no fans before, but now you have.
Never.
And,
I was actually.
It was pretty weird.
Yeah, my schedule worked out where I was able to watch that, which was cool. I mean, not cool, but it was cool to see the sort of, like, what's missing from a game with no fans and what you notice.
The circumstances behind it were obviously not what you want, but just getting away from that and just the sheer curiosity of it, like, was something to behold. And I mean, obviously, we weren't the only ones who thought that, since they filled the press box. My bid to go for that particular game was denied.
I could see that.
But it was literally every seat was full, from what I heard, and, you know, probably every national writer that could parachuted in, because, I mean, for the most part, I think national baseball writers love baseball. They might love different things about it than we do, but, you know, you don't. Well, some of those guys, you kind of get the feeling they have come to hate their life that they have to write about baseball. But for the most part, like, you get to, like, the Buster Olneys and the Tim Kirkchins of the world. And
yeah.
I mean, those guys, you can just tell they really like baseball.
Definitely.
So, of course, they were taking up seats, because that's a once-in-a-lifetime experience there.
Yeah.
When Chris Davis homered onto Utah Street, like, every reporter tweeted how you could hear Gary Thorne yelling through the whole stadium. And in fact, you could hear him on the White Sox broadcast. There was a little vine that went around, and, you know, Hawk Harrelson was doing his resign, get foul, and then And then it went out, and you could hear Gary Thorne screaming from the next booth over, "Goodbye, home run!"
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
I think even during the game, you could like Gary was talking about, he was like talking about Adam Jones or something, and Adam like pointed up to him. So Gary's voice carries very well.
Yeah, when there's no other ambient noise, the Gary Thorne voice carries.
That was the interesting part to me, at least, was like how loud stuff happens on a baseball field. Like even routine grounders coming off a bat, I mean, they still hit the ball pretty hard.
I mean,
Or at least the sound
in
is loud.
every pitch, you could just hear the camera shutters.
Yeah. And like the pop of the mitt and stuff.
Yeah. It was weird. Okay, so I've done a bad job of changing the topic, but as you can imagine, there was a lot to say about all of that. So now we're really going to move on. And one thing that we have seen with the Orioles recently, the starting pitching has gotten a little better. Headlined in particular by really the most unlikely of suspects, given that some people were probably wanting him to get dumped into the bullpen again, or just the Orioles eat like the last 3 years of his contract. But it turns out Ubaldo Jimenez has been the best Orioles starter so far. I could never have guessed that.
Yeah, I mean, total surprise, but I mean, like, I think even we were saying at the podcast at the beginning of the season, he's got the stuff to be the best or one of the best on the staff, and he's throwing strikes and not walking people and letting his stuff do the work, and that appears to be working so far.
Yeah, we will get a little more of him on Wednesday. I think the Wednesday game is actually going to be on ESPN for those who are not in the local area.
The
Ubaldo
Thursday game's
versus
on
Jacob
MLB Network.
deGrom, who has glorious hair, and that's really all that I know about him.
I was the rookie of the year last year too, NL. So,
I make it a point to
but
pay attention to the National League as little as possible, which doesn't serve me very well when the Orioles are playing a National League team, but
no, I wouldn't say I just know he won rookie of the year and has the funny hair. So,
glorious, glorious hair.
yeah. But yeah, Jimenez has been great. I mean, he's striking out whatever 26% of batters. He's still walking 10%, but that's better than the 14% last
Yeah, what
year.
a
And
huge
he's
difference there. I mean, if there's anything that's got to be, something that's making a difference for him. Of course, if we go over and look at his batting average on balls in play being 157, probably not going to stay that low. But even if that
No.
comes up a little, I mean, he's sitting at a 159 ERA, so even if he comes up and says, okay, he's going to allow 100 points more batting average, if he keeps his walk rate lowish,
He could still be a mid to low threes guy.
which is great for the Orioles,
Definitely.
especially if he's going 6 innings or more every time out.
Yeah.
Of course, for a while there, the Orioles were the worst team for having their starters go at least 6 innings. They're
Yes.
not entirely better on that, but I believe we're on 3 straight 7-plus inning starts now.
Yes, I think that is right.
So all the starters did well in the Rays series.
Yeah, they got bombed in the Toronto series, which I want to forget about as quickly as possible.
Yeah, we won't be able to forget about them for too long because they're coming up on the schedule again next week. But for now, okay. Of course, the Orioles are like 1-5 against the Blue Jays, and then what, 11-6 against everybody else. So they need to turn that around. Don't want to be have the Blue Jays be the team you're bad against.
No.
The Blue Jays are in last in American League East right now, but the Orioles are the worst against them so far. Less than ideal.
Yes. So, even Jimenez got bombed in his start in Toronto. The whole staff had the case of the walks that series.
It's killing me when they walk everybody. I wish they would stop.
Yeah. It's frustrating. It's frustrating to watch somebody walk down 5 pitches, especially when it's the leadoff hitter. Just kills you.
Chris Tillman is the one who's working for that 14% walk rate this year.
Yeah. You gotta believe that'll come down some.
Yeah, I'm sure hoping.
He was never a guy that was totally avoided walks, but he's not. Whatever,
Yeah,
14%.
he hasn't been that bad. Let's see. He had a
Uh-oh.
13.1% all the way back in 2010. I think it's safe to say he has evolved as a pitcher since the year 2010.
Yes.
The Orioles have come a long way. Chris Tillman has come a long way. He will be better. I'm not super worried about him.
No, not yet. Not yet.
Right. No, don't panic until Memorial Day at least.
Yeah.
Think it's
And I
fair.
mean he had a good start against the Rays, and the Rays, while are not a great offensive team, they're definitely still a patient team. And he only walked 2 in 7 innings, which that's fine. It's not ideal, but
It's still a pretty small sample size, so we haven't been here for a couple weeks, but even in that 2 weeks, adding that to what we already had, it's still a pretty smallish sample size. So
yeah.
we don't want to panic yet, nor do we want to freak out too much about anybody who's surprising us by how awesome they are, such as, for instance, Jimmy Paredes. I mean, it's
Jimmy
certainly great he's done well so far, but we don't want to get too carried away and anoint him the next Steve Pierce.
No, but people will try
There will
and
be people
have.
who try because sometimes you have to say something about the Orioles if your job is to talk about the Orioles or Baltimore sports in general. The
Yes.
kinds of people who really care about the Ravens more and wish it was football season will eventually run out of NFL draft related nonsense to talk about and will turn their eyes to baseball only because there's nothing else going on. They will advance opinions like, boy, the Orioles really need to get Matt Wieters back.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
personally am surprised by how little I have cared whether Matt Wieters hurries back, but of course we've been helped by another small sample size champion, Caleb Joseph,
Yeah.
who is presently batting .305 with a .414 on base percentage, .475 slugging percentage. That's pretty good. But you got to remember his batting average on balls in play so far is a .364. And I mean, each player is different, but in general, you could probably imagine a player's going to average about 300 for that. Maybe a little less, maybe a little more. So he's not going to keep having the .364 batting average on balls in play, probably. But that
Yeah.
doesn't mean his first month hasn't been awesome all the same.
No. And I think you have to be encouraged by the high walk rate.
Talking about
And
14% walk rates for pitchers, well, Caleb Joseph is doing that as a hitter. That's pretty good.
yeah. I mean, at the, yeah, I mean, he's been one of the more valuable catchers in baseball. He's been very good. And from the framing statistics, I think he's like top five in that too. So,
Which he rated well on last year also, if I remember. I
yes,
don't
he
the
did. I
exact
think he
number.
was top 10 or 11 last year. I think he might have been
And
11th.
he wasn't even catching a full season last year, so
No.
yeah, that's pretty good for him.
Yes. So, I mean, you can't complain. And like you had said, big talk in the offseason. Oh, they're going to get Matt Wieters back. Therefore, they're going to be better. And at this point, getting Matt Wieters back, I mean.
It's May the 4th, and we don't
Yeah.
really even have a timetable for when he's going to start rehab.
Yeah.
I
That's
think
another
the
thing.
last thing I saw from over the weekend at the series at the Trop was they were saying, well, he's been catching every other day at extended spring training or something. He's not even doing it like every day. And
Yeah,
I just have a feeling he's going to need the maximum rehab time because, as I've mentioned before and we'll probably mention again, probably wasn't a coincidence that he was 0 for spring training before they shut him down. Even when they were just trying to have him be the DH. So
probably
for
not.
whatever, I mean, he needs to get his timing back or whatever, against some kind of professional competition. I don't know, but you know, it turns out we are okay not needing to rush him back, which is good news, and
Definitely. And
we're
it also
glad
means,
to have Caleb Joseph for that purpose.
when he gets back, he can rest appropriately, not be like full go, have to start 6 days a
Yeah, they
week
don't
like
need to
was
ride him
before.
like a rented mule.
No. So, you know. But yeah, I mean, the only report I had saw with any sort of timetable recently, even though they keep giving out bad timetables, which the Orioles are becoming notorious for doing with their injured players, in my mind, but was June 1st, maybe. So, I mean, Caleb Joseph's going to get another month probably to see if he's still a viable starting catcher.
Other Orioles are closer to coming back. We had both J.J. Hardy and Ryan Flaherty start their rehab process at the Double-A Bowie just this evening. Of course, it'll be yesterday as you all listen to this, but they were out there. Hardy's shoulder did not pop out of his socket, and
No.
as far as I know, Ryan Flaherty's groin did not do anything abnormal.
Yeah,
Having mentioned
it seems
Ryan
like
Flaherty, an interesting little tidbit came up on the site today about Ryan Flaherty that I did not know. And one of our new moderators discovered that he went to the same high school as Anna Kendrick of Pitch Perfect fame. She was 2 years ahead of him. We spent the day on Camden Chat imagining that one or the other of them pines after them, the other. Even as they've gone their different ways throughout life. Maybe Anna Kendrick's a secret Orioles fan because she was friends with Ryan Flaherty. Probably not, though.
but maybe.
But maybe. Yeah. What a small world. And because we're talking, it's Deering High School in Maine. Not the kind of place you'd expect to be, having the multiple vaguely famous people coming from.
No. And definitely vaguely famous with Ryan Flaherty.
Vaguely, but he is a professional baseball player, which is more than I can
Yes.
say and ever will be able to say. He is playoff hero Ryan Flaherty.
True. Very true.
Anyway, he's working his way back. He played at
Yeah.
Bowie and did not have his leg fall off or anything else. So that's good, I guess. Of course, what will happen when those guys are activated, whenever they end up being ready, is interesting. Question.
Yeah. And it was something we had two posts, including one of which was my own today, about sort of the roster crunch that's coming. It's sort of with the injuries, whether imagined or not, at the end of spring training, sort of help them avoid it at the time. But once Hardy and Flaherty come back, right now they really don't have a third middle infielder on the team. And if you bring those two back, you could easily just option Cabrera and Ray Navarro. And then, but then you still have the same problem of having no backup middle infielder,
Right.
unless you're going to make Steve Pierce that backup middle infielder,
Well,
which
he
seems
did play,
unlikely.
speaking of small sample size, he did play three games at second base over the weekend. And
Yes.
no disaster happened. I felt like, man, that had to be like playing Russian roulette or something. And at first I
Yeah,
was like,
I.
okay, there's no way they're going to do this a second game. And then after the second game, I was like, okay, there's no way they're going to do this a third game. But then no, they did.
Yeah,
And
I
nothing
was
bad happened.
shocked. No, I mean, yeah, I was surprised nothing bad happened. I mean, Steve Pierce is a good baseball player. He seems competent out in the field wherever he's played, including, left and right field and first base, but he just doesn't seem like the guy that's going to have the chops for second base, especially the way the Orioles depend on having a good up the middle defense.
Now, do you think Steve Pierce at second base was better or worse than having Ty Wigginton at second base?
I tried to forget
I know the
that
dark days are always waiting to rear their ugly heads.
Ty Wigginton All-Star is my darkest memory.
That was pretty bad. I mean, he had like a good April that year, as I recall, and then
Yeah.
basically was not very good every other month. But nonetheless, he was the Orioles All-Star, even though I believe Nick Markakis had a pretty good year that year.
Yeah, he did. I mean, like, it shouldn't, probably shouldn't have been Ty Wigginton, but it was still, it's the darkest of memories.
It was
It's right up there with 30 to 3 for me.
That was only 2010, was only 5 years ago now. It feels like so much longer.
Well, this is kind of the opposite of those problems. There was too many bad players on those teams. There's too many players that probably deserve a spot on this team. So, if the Steve Pierce at second base thing doesn't appear to be a current long-term solution, and even then he can't play shortstop, obviously. So you just really don't have a backup middle infielder still.
I have a question for you, Alex. Do you think that the Orioles had some mad scheme in mind in putting Steve Pierce at second base? Do you think there was some kind of informed thing they were looking at where they were like, you know what, we can do this, we feel good about it? Or do you think they just kind of closed their eyes, crossed their fingers, and prayed that it would work out okay?
That's a good question. Because it kind of like the Manny Machado, remember like the Manny Machado third base thing? Like they were just playing him at shortstop all the time, but like for a couple months or whatever, they've been working him over at third base before the games. And obviously, you do that at Bowie, no one's going to notice. But it doesn't seem like that happened with Steve Pierce. It's kind of just like before the game on Tampa, they're just like,
Yeah, it was
see how he
literally
looked.
before the Friday game, and we were getting the wardrobe updates from the beat writers. If you don't follow the beat writers on Twitter, you're actually probably lucky because you don't get sucked into all the non-stories where they were
Yeah,
very
there's lots of
obsessed with
those.
who was wearing what color shorts since it was a home road game, whatever.
Yeah, they were just trying to point out all the little intricacies of playing a home game on the road.
So before Friday's game, they were talking about, okay, Steve Pierce is like doing double play turns. And I believe it was he was just out there with like Hardy at shorts. Hardy was at shortstop or something like that.
Yeah,
And so
usually
I
just like
thought it
batting
was just like,
practice.
okay, Pierce is just out there to give Hardy somebody to toss to or something. But that was actually his crash course for playing second base that whole weekend,
Yeah.
as it turned out.
I don't think they could have like hit it in spring training or anything like that. I mean, trying out Steve Pierce at second base.
Like, why would they have even thought they needed to? Because it's spring training, it would have looked like, okay, well, we could have, we could have Ryan Flaherty play second base if Scope is hurt, but of course, Scope will be a regular second baseman. Everett Cabrera can probably play second base, but then he's, of course, the shortstop with Hardy hurt. There were a lot of things involved in not even being necessary, but it was okay for 1 weekend.
Yeah, I can't see how it would be a long-term thing to have Steve Pierce be your backup middle infielder. But I guess, I mean, if they want to do it, that's one way to keep everyone they got on the roster right now, without having to DFA them or cut them, basically. But Jimmy Paredes is looked he looks bad in the field all the time,
A man without a position, and for good reason, from what he has shown us so far, unfortunately for Jimmy. And I mean, I don't want to dislike anyone on the Orioles, but Jimmy did not impress in his limited action out there.
No, I mean, he looked, even in spring training, he looked terrible in the outfield. He can't really make throws in the infield. He looks sort of like, I don't know, he looks robotic almost trying to play defense. As good as he's been at the plate, he's been as bad in the field, even in his limited exposure this year. I mean, he came in for third of that one game, and I think it was the 18-run game, and he just airmailed the throw to first base.
Yeah, Jimmy Paredes in the field explains why they decided to go with Steve Pierce for a few games. And I mean, I don't, maybe they had some design sort of on there because you have the combined factors of the Rays strike out a lot, so there's not going to be a lot of balls in play in general to begin with. And then you
True.
had what, the three probably the most fly ballish pitchers of the Orioles rotation were pitching in
Also
that
true.
series. And maybe they just kind of thought, well, there won't be too many ground balls, so we'll just have Steve Pierce at second base. I believe, I don't have it exactly off the top of my head, but I believe he only had to field like one grounder each game. And then had to take a couple, like catch the ball at second base and try to tag
Yeah, that was
somebody
pretty
or
much it.
throw it on to first for, you know, like a, it was like a
Because
double
he
play
got
relay
the.
with the catcher running, so.
Yeah, he got the. Didn't he get the put out, I guess, on the on a steal attempt too?
Yeah, where Joseph just threw the, what was it, Brandon Guyer. He was out by like a mile.
Yeah.
There was almost no way anyone could have missed that tag. All he had to do was catch the ball, and he did, so good for him, but.
So, I mean, maybe they just thought because Steve Pierce played shortstop at some point in his career, which every major league player has played shortstop at some point in their career because they're all fantastic athletes, or probably the best athlete in their high school. But
Right, because doesn't it basically work out the best player on every high school team is the shortstop?
pretty much, yeah,
Or else
because
the coach's son, who may not be the best player, is the shortstop, from what I've heard.
yeah, so you know, Adam Jones was a shortstop. You know, every a lot, you know, Manny Machado, Jonathan Scope, all those people were shortstops before they were at their current positions.
Branching out to
So,
other places.
yeah.
Of course,
So,
sometimes you get they never really make the transition. As we as I invoke another name from the dark days, of course, we had Billy Rowell was a
oh,
shortstop at one
yes.
time, but then he
Yeah,
couldn't
he
be a
flamed
shortstop
out pretty
or a
hard.
third baseman or anything at all.
Yeah. I
One of
don't.
many names that just so explains the bad years because yeah. You know who the two draft picks were after Billy Rowell?
Was it
2006 draft, the first round.
T was Tim Lincecum after
Yeah,
him?
Billy Rowell was number 9. Tim Lincecum was number 10. Max Scherzer was number 11.
Oh,
Now, I know you can't go and say, you know, with authority, well, the Orioles would have drafted blah 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 because I don't know who else they might have drafted off the top of my head, and you know you never know, either Tim Lincecum or Max Scherzer as Orioles might have been ruined and been terrible,
true.
but man, that's too
They
bad.
clearly got. I mean, I don't think Billy Rowell ever saw time above double A.
It's yeah.
And then I think he got like cut and kicked out of the organization on like less than clean circumstances.
Yeah, didn't he like failed a test for marijuana or something, and then they just kind of were trying to convert him into a pitcher, and he just said F that and left.
Something along those
Something weird.
lines.
It was always weird.
Yeah. So he got his big bonus and doesn't play baseball anymore.
Yeah, let's not talk about him anymore.
No.
Sorry for even bringing him up.
But so Jimmy Paredes seems like he's never going to see the field for a regular playing time. Steve Pierce can emergency play second
He's
base.
probably the emergency catcher too, although I hope we don't find out.
Yes, don't need to find that out either. So, if they want a third middle infielder, whether that be Ray Navarro, Ebrith Cabrera, Jason Nix, whoever, they're gonna
Why did
have
you
to
have to
cut
bring up that name, Jason
Jason
Nix?
Nix. Jason Nix could be a backup middle infielder, right? Or Paul Janish, was that better?
That is better.
I
Marginally
guess
better.
Janish is probably the better defensive player, but you know, if they want someone like that, they're gonna have to cut an outfielder, most likely, because they have like six on the roster right now.
Yeah, then you would be, yeah, somebody would have to go
Yeah.
from the outfield range there, and well,
Yeah.
none of those guys are lighting the world on fire, as was discussed on Camden Chat just this morning. For instance, Alejandro Deaza is really off to a rough first year.
Yes. Very bad. And you know, really, I think if you look at the roster, him and David Lowe are kind of like are very similar players. I think Diaz was probably a better hitter, but he's been really bad so far and is getting older. Is older than David Lowe. And you know, he's been striking out a ton, almost 31% of the time. He's not walking.
It's pretty bad. 31% is ridiculous. Like,
He's swinging at bad pitches. He's not making contact on those pitches. He's not swinging at good pitches. He looks lost and seems lost.
219 average, 265 on base percentage, 375 slugging percentage, and that's how you get Manny Machado batting leadoff.
Yes.
Not a bad choice, actually.
I also agree. I think that's a good choice.
As it has turned out. There was a very good article posted on Monday on Fangraphs by Jeff Sullivan, who's basically the best baseball writer on the internet. I wish I could write like Jeff Sullivan and have such interesting insights about probably not the first time I've ever said that on CamdenCast, nor will it be the last. But he wrote an article about whether Manny Machado has had the light bulb turn on as far as plate discipline.
Yeah.
Because he basically didn't swing at a ball out of the strike zone all weekend. Something like that.
Something along those lines, which is crazy. And and he's got a nice walk rate this year, way above his career average. Where is he at right now? 11.5%. I think he's never been above 5 in his career. He's clearly taking pitches.
Yeah, like last year he walked 20 times in 354 plate appearances, and this year he has already walked 11 times in 94 plate appearances.
Yeah. So, and if he can keep that up, I mean, like we said, I mean, he's a great leadoff two-hole hitter.
He has stolen 3 bases without getting caught yet. I mean, that's small sample size too, but still.
Yeah.
It's utilizing your speed well.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's been great. And like, Jeff said, I mean, just go read the article that he wrote. I mean, it's great, and you can read all about it. I think the one thing that he's been in the most at bats that are like pitcher or hitters counts of anyone in Major League Baseball. He's had like the most 2-1, 3-1 counts.
That's a heck of a stat right there.
Yeah. Jeff Sullivan phrased it as like the 100th percentile or something along those lines. So, I mean, he's been able to really set himself up well. And, his batting average and his line has improved greatly over the last, 3 weeks or so. Started off poorly, but he's going to, it's coming up and he's going to keep coming up if he's got, if he keeps up what he's doing right now. And I think it's even more impressive, even though he was struggling and sort of hitting balls at people and stuff like that, that he has really stayed the course and been patient and not gotten overly aggressive.
Yeah, we certainly spent some time talking about people who've had batting average on balls in play in their favor so far this year. Manny Machado is actually the opposite. He has a .258 batting average on balls in play, and his career number is a .313. So we can probably expect that's going to come up. And along with that coming up, his batting average and on-base percentage will likely also rise.
Yes.
So his current batting line of .250, .330, .450, not great, but not bad. So if that's due to regress towards the mean and the mean is upward, that's going to be pretty cool. That will be nice to have that kind of improvement in the line, in a spot in the lineup.
Definitely. Definitely. And well, he's struggled with some errors at third base in the last week or so. He's still an excellent defensive third baseman.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him in the long run, but he certainly has had some poor plays of late here. It seemed just like boneheaded mistakes. Like, man, how did he even make that mistake? Because he's Manny Machado. Yeah. He's not supposed to make mistakes like that. And I don't know. But
yeah,
I'm not worried about him in the long run. Nor should you be, or anyone out there.
No, I'm not either. I remember right when he came back from the injury last year, he would kind of struggle a little bit with some errors and just might be some early season stuff. I think he'll be fine. There's no reason to be concerned.
Adam Jones is still walking a decent bit. Now, he's not doing 11%, 12%, but I mean, for Adam Jones, 5.2% is a heck of a lot.
It is. I mean, it's his highest with the Orioles since 2009 when he, and it's, I mean, that's great. And he's still not striking out as much only 12.5% right now,
We're
keeping that
past the
contact
point where
rate
we're at
super high.
the stabilization point or whatever.
Yep. We've reached it, so shouldn't, it's something to watch again, just because you've reached a stabilization point doesn't mean he's gonna strike out 12% of the time for the rest of the year. But it's something to watch, and if he can maintain that or even only go up to like a 15% strikeout rate or something like that, that's still just more balls he's hitting, making contact with, and the more he makes contact, the better it is for the Orioles because he rarely makes soft contact.
He's done a good job also of just, well, I mean, in not striking out, he's making contact and he's getting hits on like two strike pitches that he just kind of takes the other way instead of whiffing on, or he will foul off a bunch of pitches. And it's been nice to see. I don't know if that's Jones himself has just kind of finally had something click, or did the new hitting coach Scott Coolball have some effect on him, or I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's probably literally impossible to say definitively.
His career contact rate, anytime he swings, he would make contact 75% of the time. And this year he's at about 82% contact rate. When he swings in the strike zone, it's a 92.5% contact rate. Swings outside of the strike zone, it is a 69.2% contact rate, which is that's very high actually. For
That is
that
very high.
particular number.
He's got the swing and the ability to hit pitches that aren't in the strike zone and hit them hard for singles the other way, like you were saying. And so the fact that if he's making contact on those pitches, I don't have a problem with it. He's still swinging less than he did last year and less than he did in 2013 on pitches outside of the strike zone. So, thus far he appears to be laying off pitches outside of the strike zone that he can't hit and swinging at those that he can and making contact at a pretty good clip.
After about a month of baseball, Adam Jones is batting over 400. That's also not going to continue. Again, we go to the batting average on balls in play. It's not the perfect measure, but when you look at someone's batting average on balls in play, say Adam Jones, and he's got a 417, that's coming down.
Yes.
That would be so absurdly high, you almost can't even fathom that happening. But even if it comes down a bit, he's still gonna be doing very well. And anytime you're over 400 after the first month, then everybody starts coming out and giving you the whole, well, man, haven't had the hit over 400 since blah 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 and Ted Williams, blah blah blah. And I looked up Ted Williams after people started talking about that, and holy man, his 1941 season was actually insane. With a 406 batting average, 553 on base percentage, 735 slugging percentage.
Wow.
Talking about batting average on balls in play, Ted Williams actually had a higher batting average than his batting average on balls in play because he hit more home runs than he had strikeouts,
Yeah.
which, again, it's almost unfathomable in the modern game. Like he batted 406 and had a 378 batting average on balls in play.
That year he hit 406, he did not win the MVP.
Oh my gosh, you're absolutely right.
Joe DiMaggio won it.
Joe DiMaggio also had a pretty good year that year. We will give him that. He batted
Yeah.
357, 440, 643.
Yeah, but I mean,
Yeah.
406.
Ted Williams was the runner-up, but wow, I mean, so if we look at baseball reference WAR, Joe DiMaggio had a 9.1 WAR. Ted Williams had a 10.6 WAR.
Yeah. I mean,
You go back
I
into the
can't believe he
annals of
didn't win the
baseball,
MVP.
and there's some remarkable numbers back then. And
That's crazy.
that's the comparison you now have to look at Ted Williams 1941 when you look at, okay, Adam Jones is batting 402 through April. So again, he's not going to keep it up.
No,
But
he's not.
it's awesome that
But
even after a month, you kind of go and you look at that. It's cool.
You just hope you all you really hope is that it's just not a crash landing.
Yeah, like I hope he
That
doesn't go 0
it
for
sort of
his next
slowly goes
30 now
down.
that we've talked about that on this podcast. I don't know if the Camden Chat Jinx has ever, or Camden Cast Jinx has ever hit that hard. But.
Yeah. So, yeah. But he's been great, and he's been the team MVP, and, I mean, you know, yeah.
Already
so.
Worth 1.6 FWAR. It's only been 23 games.
I know he's tops in the majors in that right now. Or, like, near the top, not the top. But the Orioles have also played less games than a lot of, most teams.
Yeah, they've got the two games against the White Sox still to be made up as part of a two-for-one doubleheader. May the 28th, I think, is the day for that one.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, May the 28th.
So the only people who are at Jones's level or better, and that was going into Monday's game, so some of these guys might have moved slightly up or down. We have D. Gordon and Matt Carpenter and Mike Trout are your trio who have more FWAR than Adam Jones going into Monday.
Yeah. And speaking of BABIPs, D. Gordon has a 494 BABIP.
That is coming down.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I don't see D. Gordon carrying a whatever 50% of the balls he puts into play fall as hits. I don't think it's going to happen.
It's just it doesn't happen. I mean, I guess it's remotely possible, but it's probably not going to happen.
No. But yeah.
Some players can carry a little higher.
Yeah, you know,
others.
It depends.
And
Chris
that's
did,
sort
like,
of a skill. But
Adam Jones has a, like, 315, 320 career BABIP, 317. I think Chris Davis is in, like, the 330s and stuff. Like, people hit the ball harder than other people, and if you hit the ball harder, it's going to fall for a hit more often.
And then there's players who just kind of seem to doink the ball all over the place, and they get hits a lot. Loath as I am to even speak his name, Derek Jeter is in this category. He had a 350 batting average on balls in play over his long career of unnecessarily diving into the stands and jump throwing and all that. No, but seriously, so, I mean, when you have a batting average on balls in play that's that high, and obviously he had a long time for that to stabilize at that level. You know, that was a skill on his part to be able to have a number that high. But most players are not going to be much above the 300 level.
No. And another example of like that, which a player I like a lot more, Ichiro, has a career 343 BABIP. So while league average tends to be somewhere between, you know, like the 295, 298, something like that, you know, there are players that can be above and below it.
And of course,
so,
players who are fast can get a little higher too, because they're going to beat out more infield grounders.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff.
True.
God, Ichiro is still playing this year. Why are you doing that, Ichiro? He really wants 3,000 hits, I guess.
Yeah, well, rumored to go to the Orioles this offseason.
Oh, I don't even want to think about that. I don't think that was ever really going to happen.
You don't think so?
No, I just think that was one of those rumors that was somebody was
know.
Blowing.
Stuff. I always love watching Ichiro play. It would have been a terrible sign for the Orioles, but
Ichiro, when he was not 41 years old, was cool to watch him play. Ichiro on the chase for 3,000 hits. He has 18 so far this year.
Well,
it's terrible, but
he started his career with 11 straight 200-hit seasons.
And that was after he spent most of his prime in Japan.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Talk about a definite Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he should yeah. I don't think there's not a question in my mind.
Like, he's
he
not going
to
get the 3,000 hits in MLB, but especially if you count what he did in Japan. I mean, that's an easy Hall of Famer.
Yeah, for me, definitely, I would say.
You never know with the baseball writers these days. But.
Yeah. Yeah, they like to keep people out. Seems what they're best at these days.
Yeah, but let's move on from that. So that's how you get a high BABIP. Batting
yes.
average on balls in play. Some players are a little higher than others, but for the most part, you're going to get 300-ish.
As they call it, it is a repeatable skill.
Yeah.
Over the course of time.
But Adam Jones is still awesome, even if he has a high BABIP. It's going to come down. He's really He's been awesome the first month of the season. We were talking about how awesome he'd been after about 2 weeks, and here we are 2.5 weeks beyond that, and he's still awesome.
Indeed.
Hopefully he can stay hot-ish, not this hot, because again, it's not going to happen. He's not going to have a 468 WOBA or a 199 WRC plus when the season ends, but he can still have a pretty darn good season, even if he inevitably regresses a bit, especially if he's going to walk a little bit more and strike out markedly less.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, as we had talked about last time, he's gotten better pretty much every year he's been with the Orioles, and this could be the next evolution of him getting better.
That would really be something. We haven't seen him slow down yet, and hopefully between now and the next Camden cast, the slowdown does not begin.
No.
That's our best case scenario. Baseball hardly ever works out the way you want it to, of course, as evidenced by the Orioles. Well, so far this year, they've not exactly had their plan A in many positions happening.
No.
Of course, we've yet to see J.J. Hardy. We only had 9 games of Jonathan Scope.
That's unfortunate. I know that injury happened right after we recorded last time. I was looking forward to watching Scope. He was looking a little bit better at the plate and still looking great in the field. It stinks.
But of course,
and we really haven't heard much about him other than he's, in a knee brace.
Yeah, he showed up in the dugout when they were at the trap, as most of the DL'd Orioles did, because of course the Sarasota facility is not so far away from St. Petersburg. Actually, after Manny had one of his errors, I don't know if you were all out there watching on Masson, but if you weren't, Manny made an error and he looked kind of down about it when he was on the bench, and Scope just kind of came over and threw his arm around him and looked like he was trying to make him feel better. It was, as my friend Stacey Fulcomer would say, it was adorable.
It was.
Scope and That's Machado fair. Are looking kind of like BFFs this year, actually, and it's pretty fun to see.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So, yeah, hopefully Scope can come back sooner than we all think.
What do they give him, the 6 week timetable ish?
Something like that. I had heard, I think, from when they were talking to him, he hopes before the All-Star break.
That seems reasonable enough.
You'd think. It just always seems like with these Orioles injuries that it's like, oh, he's rest and rehab and he'll be back in 3 weeks, and then it's surgery or it's delayed or it's
what is the point of that crazy optimism, do you think? Like, I always wonder that. Like,
I don't
why
know.
Like you could just as easily say you don't know, he'll be back when he's back. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's not like Buck Showalter's not gonna go on the rant like the Reds manager if somebody writes something or other. I don't know.
I don't necessarily either. I know I was listening to the Baseball Prospectus Effectively Wild podcast like a week or two ago. They had some guy on talking about the Mets, and he was talking about the they call it, I guess in the Mets blogosphere land, they call it the Mets month, where you just add a month on to any injury, the timetable that the team gives.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt like it was the same thing with the Orioles. I couldn't think of a alliterative term for it, but it kind of seems like it's the same way, where it's usually worse than what they're telling you.
I mean, I don't know why teams do that. It's like, I just don't know. Like, what is the benefit? Like, maybe I'm just not clever enough to see why. It's like, probably has something to do with they don't want the other teams to know what their situation is, I guess. In case they're out looking for, like, trades or something, they don't want to seem desperate. I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably, I don't know, something along those lines most likely, but yeah, so hopefully we see Scope before the All-Star break. I'd mean, jeez, that's sweet. Even if that was July, 2 more months, but I think they can make it work with the players they got at second base. Ryan Flaherty actually has looked pretty decent at the plate this year.
You know, Alex, speaking of the All-Star break, How many All-Stars do you think the Orioles will end up with this year?
Oof, that's a good question. I think the clear favorite, obviously, is Adam
Yeah,
Jones. That's one.
I would be shocked if he's not a starter. But do they have any others who will break in with, especially with some, I mean, maybe Machado, I guess. But with some of
Yeah,
the
probably.
injuries they've been suffering, like, I mean, Chris Davis sure isn't going to be an all-star.
Most likely
Most
not.
likely not. All-star voting is open now, by the way. This year is the first year ever it's only online voting. No more ushers passing out the ballots in stadiums and doing the whole dimpled and hanging Chad business.
Yeah. But yeah, I could see Jones and Machado, maybe Zach Britton. I
He's
don't think any
done,
other
yeah.
starters probably got a
No,
chance.
I don't think we're gonna get the surprise last day Chris Tillman All-Star. What was
No.
that, 2 years ago that happened?
Yeah. That was Davis, Wieters.
It was like literally the morning of they were gonna do the All-Star ceremony, like the last game before the All-Star break, and then they were like, oh yeah, Chris Tillman's out here with the rest of the bunch. And it was like, what? Because somebody wasn't able to pitch because they had just started the day before or something like that. So they were,
It was something like that,
and
yeah. So,
I mean, Tillman hadn't lit the world on fire, but I think he literally had the most wins in the AL of all the non All-Star pitchers at that moment. So whoever was the
Jim
manager that
Leland.
year brought him on, and Chris Tillman was an All-Star pitcher. More power to him, but probably he won't be this year.
Probably not. So I mean, but it's still so early. I mean, if Jimmy Paredes continues hitting 350, he might be an all-star. I don't know.
The Orioles would like you to know you can go to orioles.com/voteorange and do all that voting, and they need you to help spread the movement for such hashtags as Vote Deaza. You know, I just think I'm gonna let that one be. Vote Pierce, and just gonna let that one be. The deal is if you vote 35 times and have the Orioles selected as your favorite club, you'll receive an online promo code valid for $10 off a box seat or $5 off a reserved seat for any game in the Orioles series against the Atlanta Braves on July 27th through 29th. Each promo code will be valid for the online purchase of up to 4 seats. Well, that's just definitely worth voting 35 times for. Yeah. Let me get right on that. Actually, I have not voted for the All-Star game other than I was at the stadium and got a ballot for several years, and that will probably continue. Call me a bad fan if you want, especially if an Oriole just narrowly misses. But I just don't care.
I will call you a bad fan. No, I typically vote, and I'll vote whatever the bunch of times to get the deal, whatever deal. Although the deal this year is pretty lame.
Since
In the
there's no
past, it's
paper
been like a
ballots,
free
they don't
ticket.
have the whole oh, vote 1,000 times and you get
Yeah.
whatever the heck.
Wasn't the one you could vote like 10,000 times and get a box seat, although it was like physically impossible to vote 10,000 times? Something like that.
Yeah, let's see if I can find that from last year. Here's our email from last year. Okay. Oh, that wasn't it. Yeah, there was something absurd. It might even have been more than 10,000. Let's see. In park, no, it was 10,000. Okay, in park rewards. 10,000 ballots submitted would be 2 field box seats for Orioles versus Indians. Now, this is last year, mind you. For last year's Orioles versus Indians on May 23rd, and on-field passes for a post-game fireworks. So, how
For
would you
May the
get?
23rd?
Yeah, May the 23rd of last year.
How could you have possibly voted 10,000
Apparently, you
times?
could get multiple ballots per game and then submit them, but like, how are you? How would you have voted for 10,000 ballots? Like, somebody did it.
Especially by May 23rd, because they
Somebody
don't even
did it.
release the All-Star ballots until the end of April.
Somebody did it, but I don't know how anyone could ever be that bored, or that.
Someone did do it?
Oh, I'm pretty sure they did.
Oh, wow.
The top.
I figured there was just some sort of scam.
I see. That's what I thought, and in fact, my analogy for that was. I don't know if this ever happened to you, Alex, but it would be like in middle school, and they would have like a school-wide fundraiser,
Oh
And they
yeah.
would call everybody in to the gym, and there would be this guy would have like the money machine. It was like a phone booth with a wind blower in there. And the person that sold the most would get in. If they sold a certain amount of money, you would get like a minute in the money machine to stuff dollar bills down your pants, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they never, I don't know that I ever saw anyone ever get in the money machine. And
Yeah, that's.
that was what I likened the 10,000 ballot reward tier to, is that was the money machine. And maybe somebody did, I don't know, but it seemed like probably wasn't happening. I think I remember talking to a Camden chat reader who did like the they did like 3,000 or something like that, and it was something like they would punch them. It was a fan who was from DC, and they would just spend their ride home from the stadium punching like hundreds of ballots out, because it was like if they rode at night, it would have to be like they take the light rail to BWI and then wait for a bus that goes to the Greenbelt Metro station and then ride that metro, the DC train to wherever.
That
Like,
sounds awful.
honestly, if I had to do all that just to go to Camden Yards, I don't know that I would even be an Orioles fan. And really,
Yeah,
the
I
Orioles
certainly
fans who are
wouldn't be one
still
that
in
went to
DC and
Camden
Northern
Yards.
Virginia, like, honestly, I salute you, because
Yeah.
that's hardcore getting there.
That's ridiculous. I would never do anything like
No, I
that.
mean, I have it easy. I just go up around 695, up 95, 395, and I'm there.
Yeah, I mean, I can walk, so.
You got it even easier then, so.
Yeah. Makes it a lot easier to
So
go to
yeah, no
games.
paper ballots this year. Online only. And you can vote if you want, Orioles.com/voteorange. 35 times per email address. So if you're really dedicated, you have multiple email addresses, you can vote even more. Again, I am not so dedicated. I am not going to be worried about saving $10 for a box seat on one specific series only in
Yeah, like
July.
what it used to back like a couple years back, it was a free ticket, like to a crappy game, which is cool. Cooler
Yeah,
than
better than
$5 off to an Indians
one
game.
weirdly specific thing. I don't know. Whatever. Hopefully we get some Orioles All-Stars. I mean, Adam Jones is the only one where I would be offended if he's not, and I'm fairly sure he will be,
Yeah,
just
I mean,
because
I
he's been
got,
so awesome.
you know. We've done whatever, three or four of these podcasts, and we've said it every single time. It's still early.
But the
So
voting's open,
anything can
and people are
change.
voting based on early results, so.
True. I tend to wait until towards the end, more towards the All-Star break, but I could definitely see Jones and Machado being All-Stars, and you just got to wait to the rest of the people to shake out. But, Jones has been voted in by the fans as a starter multiple times. He's got a nice online, like social media presence that always seems to help him. Also, being very good helps him.
One dark horse, I think you could maybe see if he stays hot and he's like, then he could maybe get on like the player vote or something. It would actually be Caleb Joseph. If
Was
he
thinking that
somehow stays
too.
hot, I could see him being a surprise pick. Especially
I just
because I'm
don't.
sure baseball players just appreciate that he's like a grinder.
Yeah,
Because many of the
that's
reserves are
true.
picked by players, if I remember right.
Yeah, players and then the manager. Sure, I was thinking about that too. I don't know.
I mean,
It
you have
it's
to
just I
stay
guess how
hot,
many
but
at bats does he lose when Wieters comes back, or if Wieters comes back,
yeah,
and
we'll see.
how does that affect his line and his All-Star candidacy?
It's a dark horse, worth keeping an eye on, I guess. And of course, Orioles fans, if you want, you can always vote for him yourself. Probably he's not going to win, but don't let that stop you if you really want to.
Just don't vote for Everett Cabrera.
Yeah, I would be okay with that.
Stop yourself from voting for him.
Not my favorite Oriole, I've got to say.
No. Not mine either.
But yeah, maybe Britton, because he's done very well so far, certainly. There's always
Yes,
like
he's.
four or five closers on the team.
Yeah,
That's
I
just what
could
they
see.
do.
He wasn't one last year, right? He was not an All-Star last year.
I don't think he was. You'd think I would remember since it was only last year.
Yeah, I feel like I remember that too.
I
I
honestly have a bad memory for baseball facts lately, because I feel like, oh, I can look up anything I want on Baseball Reference, and it's like that's removed the need for me to remember like anything.
Yeah, he wasn't in the All-Star game
last year.
Sure
was not.
No, but he's been great this year, and he's almost even been better than last year.
Yeah, he's been really about as good. I mean, even better if you like his ERA is about the same as last year. But last year he had a fielding independent pitching of 3.13. So far this year it is a fielding independent pitching of 1.16.
Yeah,
I mean, another one of those numbers that's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, he's been striking out. Whatever, almost
15
I mean,
batters
last year
in 10 and 2/3 innings.
Yeah, good for 12.66 per nine, and still getting 75% ground balls. So I mean, just no one's hitting anything hard off of him.
I dig it.
Yeah. Yep, it's pretty great. So yeah, I could see him if he continues that over the next couple of months, he could definitely be an all-star.
Yeah, I guess then that would come down to just what, I guess Ned Yost will be the AL manager this year.
Ugh.
I don't know if that helps or hurts his chances. Ned Yost might like a closer who's done well, but of course he'll maybe pick his entire bullpen or something stupid like that. Which,
wouldn't
I don't
surprise
know,
me
you can't blame
Ned
him
Yost doing
that
something stupid.
Bullpen is what it is, but
yeah.
I would be annoyed all the same.
So would I.
So, Alex, do you have any final thoughts about the Orioles at this moment in time, 10:20 p.m. on May the 4th, 2015?
Final thoughts? Well, we get to watch Bartolo Colon both pitch and hit tomorrow.
Oh, yes, we do.
So be excited for that, Orioles fans.
We'll
you
also
get
to
watch the Orioles
Boris bat, but that probably won't be as fun.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say next, is you'll get to also watch the Orioles pitcher's bat, which is going to remind you of why American League Baseball is infinitely superior to National League Baseball.
Well, Ubaldo used to be in the NL, so maybe he's sort of got some big...
There's no way. Not
big DNA left over.
From his pitching motion alone, I would think he's a pretty terrible hitter.
Let's see. Ubaldo Jimenez has... had 324 career plate appearances. His batting line is 113, 165, 113.
No extra base hits.
How do you walk Ubaldo Jimenez?
His 2009 season.
He walked six times in 77 plate appearances in 2009.
220, 292, 220.
Well, there you go. Maybe we'll get some of that Ubaldo. What if he does something crazy and hits a home run? They move the fences in Citi Field, you know. So.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he's not going to hit
so,
a home run. But, just hope nobody, like, fouls a ball off their own face or something like that, which actually happened not in a game, but I think it was, like, 2 or 3 years ago. It happened
to
Brian
yeah.
Mattis in batting practice.
Yeah.
He was practicing bunting, and he bunted a ball off of his own face.
Yeah. Pitchers shouldn't hit. They're really bad at it.
Universal DH now. And anybody...
It offends my sensibilities.
Anybody who does not want DH, just... I'm sorry, you were wrong. Actually, I'm not sorry. You're just wrong.
Yeah. So, that, and I guess then they got 4 games against the Yankees, and then they come back to Camden Yards... for the first time in what will have been almost 2 weeks. And
it's a May 11th game that some fans are trying to promote as reopening day, which actually I think will be kind of cool. And I'm going to go, and a number of the Camden chat writers will also be going, Alex among them. And
me included, I will be walking.
Yeah. So, when I think about that, I just remember people always talk about... during the losing streak in 1988, and they came back from a road trip, and it was like a sellout, and they called it Fantastic Fans Night or something like that.
Yeah.
And they still lost that game because it was the 1988 Orioles, but it was, this could be that kind of thing. Just one of those random games where Baltimore Orioles fans show up and support the team after. Things were
long road trip.
Things were pretty weird. A long road trip with unusual circumstances, and I hope it'll be a nice crowd. I certainly will be a part of it. number of the Camden chat staff will be also. So
I think it'll be a good crowd.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. It'll be a Monday night in May, but you know, you got to make some sacrifices to go to an Orioles game sometimes, and that's a game that'll be worth going to. So yeah, May the 11th. I hope the Orioles give us a good game, and I mean, you never know what you're gonna get when you're going to an Orioles game anyway, which really is part of the fun. And yeah, I mean, that'll be it. Reopening day is what they're calling it, and maybe that'll stick. I actually think I heard Jim Hunter use that on a Mass and broadcast. So maybe that'll be the official term.
Yeah, be cool to see the team do something for it.
That would be nice. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll get on board with that, although historically the Orioles are not the most nimble organization as far as off-the-cuff promotions. But
no, but
they got a week, so maybe they'll come up with something.
Maybe.
So that's all the time we have for tonight. Here's hoping the Orioles give us a good little stretch of time until the next Camden cast. As usual, I don't know when it'll be, but we'll try and be back sooner than 2.5 weeks this time. Famous last words on Camden cast, as longtime listeners know, but we will try. But that's all we have for tonight. So for Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown. We're bringing you Camden cast. This is Birdland, and we are out.